Good afternoon. Good to see everybody. My assignment is called The Truth About Today, and what we'll focus on is current social issues and how they intersect with the Christian faith. So that's what we're talking about this week. For our purposes, social issues just refers to topics that are of special interest to the American public. So we're talking about things like current events, social movements, emerging philosophies, and even some old ones that have been thrown back into the public discourse. But as we start into this study, I told the kids downstairs this morning, I want to start with something that I consider maybe to be the most important thing we can say on this subject. And that is that not every social issue is an issue for Christians. That's a beautiful thing that we can realize. Let me give you a few examples. We may not agree universally on the examples I'm about to give you, but at least you'll understand the spirit of what I'm saying. Not every social issue is an issue for a Christian. For example, I may have an opinion on the economy, but it's not really a Christian opinion. It's not really relevant to my faith or my salvation. However, my opinion about the economy might be informed by biblical principles, and my opinion may be absolutely right, but it is nonetheless an opinion and not an issue for the church. Here's another example. I may have an opinion on the affordability of college and student debt. That's certainly a social issue, isn't it? If you just get online and ask the internet what the most important social issues are of our time, most lists will put that somewhere in the top 10, maybe even the top 5, the affordability of college and student debt. So I may have an opinion on that. You may have an opinion on that. But that's not really a Christian issue. What I mean by that is it's not a church issue. It's not really relevant to my faith or our salvation. Once again, like other social issues, it may be informed by biblical principles. And I may have a conclusion that is absolutely, undebatably right. But that is an issue, I think, that just doesn't belong in the church. We may have well-developed opinions on many social issues that are rather important from a secular perspective. We just have to be so careful not to make these irrelevant social issues issues of faith, issues of fellowship, or issues of church business. For example, I happen to have a strong opinion on the hot topic of radiation hormesis, the linear non-threshold model on the stochastic effects of ionizing radiation, and how those models should influence the occupational dose limits in the United States. Anybody else? Very interesting. However, I'm not going to discuss that particular social issue for a couple of reasons. Number one, no one cares. Okay? Secondly, those just aren't issues for the church, no matter how much I would love to tell you my opinion on those subjects. And no matter how right I am, and I think I am right, I must not, cannot project my view of these extra-biblical issues onto other people as if they're matters of faith, as if it's a matter of fellowship, as if it is a matter relevant to the business of the church. And that may be the main thing you learned this week, and if you learn that, I will consider this class a success. Some social issues are issues for Christians, but so many are not. Some issues are worth our energy, and some are not. For example, Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 15. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Do you think Jesus knew the right solution to that man's particular problem? No doubt he did, but did he even give him an answer? He basically said, "That's not my business." He didn't bother giving an answer. This issue was not his business, not his mission. It would not have been useful to sort through that particular issue. And so it is with Christians. We may have the right answer, the correct answer, for many social issues, for secular issues, but we cannot let secular issues interfere with our mission and business as Christians and as the church. So as you personally climb through this flood of social issues and godless people screaming at you on social media, as you go through that, like many of us do, I want you to ask yourself a few questions from the perspective of a Christian, not the perspective of an American, not from the perspective of a citizen of your state or your community. Ask yourself these questions not from the perspective of a member of the school board or PTA. Ask yourself these questions about these social issues from the perspective of a Christian. Do I need to care about this issue from the perspective of a Christian? Do I even need to care? Do I need to know the answer to this issue as a Christian? Once I figure out the answer, that's right. He knows. He knows. Class dismissed. I've done what I came here to do. Once I have figured out the answer, once I know the answer, here's another question. Do I need to share my opinion on this issue as a Christian? And so many times the answer is no. Do I need to invest my time into this issue as a Christian? And here's a few more, even more important questions. Does God say anything about this issue? And do you have any reason to believe that God even cares about this particular issue? And once we've sorted through all of that, think about this. Will my involvement in this issue hurt or enhance the gospel of Christ? If you can answer that question, then you'll know what to do about that particular social issue. About 15 years ago, down at Ozark, I heard Dwayne Stoops, many of you know him, he gave a lesson called That's About a Zero. I'll be honest, I don't have a very good memory, and I don't remember too many good lessons. Doesn't matter how good they are, I don't usually remember them. But I remember that one. The lesson was, that's about a zero, based on something his late wife, Kay Stoops, used to say. When faced with different difficulties and frustrations, she would sometimes say, that's about a zero. And what she meant was, on a scale of importance from 1 to 10, that's about a zero. That doesn't really matter at all. That's not worth worrying about at all. And so as we think about these social issues, that may be the answer. It may be that's about a zero. We will find that many social issues are just not as important as the rest of the world would like us to believe. And concerning the life and mission of a Christian, we will find that most social issues just aren't important at all. So this issue of distinguishing between issues that do matter and don't matter is obviously a very important point that's made in the Bible. A few examples. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, Paul told Timothy, as I urged you when I went into Macedonia, remain in Ephesus that you may charge some that they teach no other doctrine, nor give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which cause dispute rather than godly edification, which is in faith. I think some social issues might fit into this. There are many social issues that, do they lead to dispute? Do they lead to arguing and fighting? They do. And unless we must have an answer, unless we must know, then let's just leave it out of the church, could we please? I think we can do that. Many of these issues only lead to dispute and destruction, the rupture of church and families, rather than godly edification. Same point is made in a different way in 1 Timothy chapter 6 this time. Obviously, Paul means this. Verses 3 and 4, if anyone teaches otherwise, and does not consent to wholesome words, meaningful words, things of value, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which accords with godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, reviling, evil suspicions, etc. You know, I have noticed not everyone is like this, but I can be a little bit like this. I feel like I'm making a confession to my parents about my childhood here. But I like a good argument. Anybody else? I like a good argument because I like winning. That's why. But this becomes problematic as it relates to some issues. It has taken me so long to learn. First off, I don't need to argue about everything. And secondly, I don't even need to win every argument. It is okay to walk away the loser sometimes. Sometimes when you walk away the loser, everybody wins. There's a lot of things we could debate about. And as it relates to social issues, this is definitely true. I made a very long list that I went over with the kids downstairs this morning. There's a lot of things we could talk about, we could argue about. We maybe wouldn't arrive at a consensus, and it might be a very interesting discussion, but for the most part, it would be useless. There's just so many things that are not worth our time. However, the social issues I selected to discuss this week, the truth about today, do have some significance to Christians. They're not entirely significant to Christians, but they have some significance. And so our goal is to discuss these issues as believers in God. From that perspective, as disciples of Christ, making it our goal to speak where the Bible speaks and just to keep silent where the Bible is silent. We'll try to do that. And so I've picked out five topics. We'll see how many of these we get through this week. Today we'll start by discussing what's called critical race theory. Then we'll talk about LGBT, etc. issues. I think we'll also talk about abortion this week. If we have time after that, we'll also talk about marijuana, which in today's day and age is commonly known as cannabis. And then I hope to have time at the end of the week to deal with Christians and politics and a more general view of what Christians should do. Because that's one of the big questions that everyone wants to know. So we've got this social issue, so what now? We know the answer, so what now? What do we do? What is my responsibility as a Christian? What is our responsibility as the church? And I hope to get to that by Friday. I picked these particular social issues because, again, they have some intersection with Christianity. And maybe I'm overemphasizing this, but I do find it to be important. These issues don't have entire intersections with Christianity. It's not like every subpoint of these issues is totally relevant to the Christian faith, but in some ways they are somewhat relevant, and for that reason they're worth talking about. One way or another, directly or indirectly, these particular issues do have some discussion in the Bible. And for that reason, because they are of public interest in the United States, we should be well informed to the extent that we need to be well informed. And there may be some cases where we should take some very specific actions. So with that introduction, let's jump into the fire. Critical race theory. Downstairs with the teenage class, I asked them how many of them had heard of critical race theory. So this was a group of kids. I'll call them kids. I guess I'm 37, so I can call teenagers kids now. Maybe that's how it works. So I asked this group of kids that were between 12 and 20. That was the age range that we had. How many of them had heard of critical race theory? I wasn't asking, do you understand it? Do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it? I just said, have you heard of it? And about half. So I don't know what to make of that, but I thought it was interesting that about half of them had heard about it. And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm guessing that most of you, I would think, have probably at least heard that phrase circulating through the news, circulating through social media. It is an idea that's actually been around for several decades, but it's getting special attention right now. Critical race theory is, in some ways, the basis of the modern social justice movement. It's the basis of radical political activism in our universities. So this has a very strong presence in universities, has so for a while. Critical race theory, sometimes abbreviated CRT, by the way. If I say CRT during this lecture, that's what I'm talking about, critical race theory, CRT. CRT is the curriculum used for so-called diversity training across the country, and it's being introduced into K-12 education and as well. And that's why so many people are noticing this and want to understand it, and many people are objecting to it. So it's worth our time to talk about it and understand how it does and does not intersect with Christianity. And I think it does. I think we'll show today that it does intersect with the Christian faith in some ways. So we should talk about it. So in today's lesson, we're going to talk about basically four things. What it is. If you haven't heard of it, you'll be very interested to know what it is. Secondly, we need to sort through why it matters anyway. We will talk about where it's wrong and where it's right, and what God says about race and race relations. So let me begin with a word of caution. We're talking about some volatile issues this week in this class, including this subject. We're talking about race, racism, some very controversial issues, and I think this probably goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Whatever we say here today on this class, let's do so with the spirit of humility and gentleness. There are aspects of critical race theory that are very offensive to patriotic Americans, and that's why some people are so opposed to it. There are aspects of critical race theory that you may find, and rightly so, to misrepresent American history. And that's why some people find it so offensive. And there are many aspects of critical race theory that you may find to be a misrepresentation of you. And so as we go through what it is, just beware that as we talk about this subject, there may be instances where you feel like you agree, there may be instances where you strongly disagree. But to start, we just want to try to understand it. The danger of this topic and others like it is we could get so entangled in arguments over words and theories that are mostly irrelevant to the Christian faith and the business of the church. We should understand this ideology, but I don't even think we talk about this subject for the sake of winning arguments over critical race theory. We're not trying to win arguments about American history or American government. What are we trying to win? Souls. That's the only reason to talk about a subject like this. So let's keep that in mind. One more thing I want to say as we go into this. I don't usually talk about black people and white people. That's not in my daily vocabulary. I just don't talk that way. But the nature of this topic, that is what it's about, is black people and white people. And so I just want to warn you that that's the nature of this discussion. And while I wouldn't usually talk in that way, that is the substance of critical race theory. And I just wanted you to know that that's what's coming. So let's begin with some terminology. If you've never heard of critical race theory, here's what a typical definition sounds like. Critical race theory states that U.S. social institutions, such as the criminal justice system, the education system, the labor market, the housing market, and the healthcare system, here's the big point in critical race theory, are laced with racism. The system, they say, is laced with racism, embedded in laws, regulations, rules, and procedures that lead to differential outcomes by race. So to say it another way, critical race theory, or CRT, teaches that the structure of American society, not even so much people, but the structure of society is built in a way, they say, that elevates white people and suppresses everybody else, but especially black people, people of color. This is commonly called the racial hierarchy. That's a term you'll see a lot in this literature, with whites on top and blacks on bottom. It's sometimes called institutionalized racism, because, again, critical race theory says that racism is built into the system. It's built into the structure, into the laws. That's the idea of institutionalized racism. And they say it's a manifestation of so-called white supremacy. One critical race theorist says this: white supremacy is a force so fundamental to America that it's difficult to imagine the country without it. And as a result, they say, of this flawed system, critical race theory concludes that racism is the default of society. It's the norm, not the exception. Critical race theory says that racism in this country is reproduced automatically. Black people are suppressed because of the system of laws and governments, according to the theory. The structure of society reproduces racism even by whites, this is significant, even by whites that have no hate or prejudice towards blacks. So sometimes when you're watching the news about this, do you ever sit down and feel, well, it feels like they're saying all whites are racist. Well, in critical race theory, that's actually part of the belief system, is that if you're white, you are racist in the sense that you're a complicit part of the system that reproduces racism. So racism in this context commonly refers to the system, to the structure that leads to differential outcomes, and not necessarily about what you feel towards other people. That's a significant distinction. And again, that's why sometimes you might be made to feel, and rightly so, that people are saying that if you're white, you're racist. If you're a complicit part of this government, you're racist. That's what they say, and that is in fact what they mean. Another term that causes an enormous amount of controversy is the term white privilege. This is the belief that the American system gives preferential advantage to whites, not consciously, but by nature of the system. Being perceived as white, quote, being perceived as white carries social and institutional status and identity with legal, political, economic, and social rights and privileges that are denied to others. So let me clarify again, I'm not asking you to agree or disagree with any of this right now. Right now, we're just trying to understand what this is, what this curriculum is, what this theory is. But most importantly, and this is what makes critical race theory different than other social theories, most importantly, critical race theory is very specifically an ideological engine that is designed to tear down the structure of American society and create a new society. And that's why I say that for many patriotic Americans, this theory makes you angry, because this theory says that America as it is has got to go. That's what this theory says. And this is the explicit goal of critical race theory. According to the American Bar Association, which strongly endorses critical race theory, critical race theory calls for a radical reordering of society and a reckoning with the structures and systems that intersect to perpetuate racial inequity. Some proponents of critical race theory say that it's just American history. That is not true. It's an interpretation of history and a condemnation of the present structure of society. There's a lot of things about critical race theory that are sort of interesting to talk about, interesting thought experiments to go through, but statements like this are the ones that bother me. Anytime anyone opposes critical race theory, they're saying you're opposed to American history because it's just American history. And that is not true. Critical race theory is not just a catalog of facts. It is a way of interpreting the facts, motivated by a spirit of activism. And this is where I do need to acknowledge from the outset that critical race theory includes some bald-faced lies baked into it. So we do need to know that. I've already told you, as we go through it, you will find some things that sound right, some things that sound wrong, but you do need to know from the beginning there are lies baked into this theory. Proponents of critical race theory will say, if you don't believe in critical race theory, then you don't believe that racism is real. That is not true. That's not a fair assessment. It is possible to believe that racism is real without believing that all of critical race theory is real. You will hear people say, if you don't believe in teaching critical race theory in school, then you must be a racist. Again, that's not fair. It's a straw man argument, and it's not true. You will hear people say, if you don't believe in educating people on critical race theory, then you must be trying to disguise America's history of racism. Does everybody understand racism has existed? I've never actually heard anyone debate that. But proponents of critical race theory, I do think it's a straw man argument, build the idea that racism has never existed in this country and does not exist when very obviously it did. But we can acknowledge that it has and maybe sometimes does still exist without also saying that this entire theory, critical race theory, is true. And so, having said all of those things, as frustrating as that may be sometimes, let's all please remember our priorities. And I want to say this carefully, but I also want to say this unambiguously. Are we here as a church to defend the American culture? Is that why we're here? Are we here as the body of Christ to defend American government? No. Are we here to defend American laws? No, that is not our purpose. That is not why Christ built his church. We are here to defend the gospel. So again, this topic only matters to us to the extent it relates to Jesus Christ, his gospel, and his church. Critical race theory is a human philosophy. And so, like many human philosophies, you would expect there to be some right ideas and some wrong ideas and some very dangerous ideas. And while I may have some strong opinions as an American citizen, I cannot let that distract me from my view as a citizen of the kingdom of God. And that's the perspective we want to try to maintain. This is an exercise in what Paul describes in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. Paul says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God, for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ." So our question then is, where and how is critical race theory at odds with the knowledge of God? I think it's helpful to organize critical race theory into some main themes so that we can talk about those themes. I'm sorry if this starts to feel a little bit academic. I don't mean for it to be that way, but this can be a rather complicated topic, and it's hard to talk about it without understanding some of these pillars, some of these foundations. So let me emphasize again, as we go through this part of the lesson, I'm not even asking you to agree or disagree right now. Our goal right now is just to understand. As we go through them, there will be points where you very obviously disagree, but we're not going to talk about that just yet. These themes that I've arranged for us are mostly based on the summaries provided by Britannica that mostly agree with other resources I looked at, such as the book White Fragility and statements from the American Bar Association. These pillars are the basis of critical race theory. And again, for now, we're not even trying to dissect the theory. We want to understand it. Pillar number one, a theme, a pillar, one of the main ideas that props up the idea that systemic racism exists in America is this claim. Pillar number one, that race is a social construct designed to oppress. Again, we're not trying to prove or disprove that statement right now. This is just a statement made as a pillar of this theory. Race is a social construct designed to oppress. In other words, critical race theory claims that the idea of race is not based in biology or science, but rather is based on the desire of one group of people to oppress another group of people. Here's a description of that from Britannica. "The associations between physical characteristics and behavioral tendencies have been created and maintained by dominant groups to justify their oppression and exploitation of other groups on the basis of the latter's supposed inferiority, immorality, or incapacity for self-rule." Does everyone understand what that's saying? So this claim says that race isn't even a real thing. It's just been invented for the sake of oppressing. Pillar number two in critical race theory. They say racism is embedded within the structure of American society. And in some ways, this is critical race theory. That is the idea. The idea is that incidents of racism, they say, are not deviations from the norm, but are rather the expected outcomes of an oppressive system. Racial discrimination and the disparities associated with it exist because the system of American society is designed in this way. Another quote from Britannica explaining this: most people of color continue to be routinely discriminated against or otherwise unfairly treated in both public and private spheres, as demonstrated by numerous social indicators. Pillar number three, another claim made by critical race theory. They say all racial inequity is always caused by racism within the power structure. Proponents of critical race theory, I think this is significant. You'll have to chew on this for a while, and we will talk about it later. Proponents of critical race theory say that racism is the only reason for racial disparity. Robin DiAngelo, in their book, said, if all humans are equal, disparity in condition must be the result of systemic discrimination. Further, they do claim that it's racist to suggest something other than racism might be behind these disparate outcomes. That sounds like a joke, but it's actually not a joke. This is part of the theory, that if you disagree with the theory, then you're obviously complicit in that system, that you're a white supremacist, that you're part of this engine of oppression. And for me, that's where the argument ends. Once somebody tells me I'm not allowed to disagree with them, that argument has lost all weight with me. They literally say it is racist to question their theory. Sorry, I gave away my opinion on that one. I've been trying not to do that. Pillar number four, legal advances for people of color are only, I should have said only, are only the result of interest convergence. In other words, what they're saying is that legal and social progress is only allowed by white people because it tends to serve the interests of white people in the social hierarchy. For example, critical race theory says that the only reason that a black man like Barack Obama could be elected to the presidency is because it somehow serves the interests of powerful white people. The only reason they say that blacks are allowed to vote is because it serves the interests of powerful white people. And we could keep going down the list. That would be the claim, that any time a right, a privilege has been passed on to a marginalized community, they would argue it's only because the dominant social group is giving them that because it helps to perpetuate their own oppression of that group. Pillar number five in critical race theory. They say color blindness in policy, and that just means being racially neutral, building policies that give no consideration to race whatsoever. They say that color blindness in policy, being racially neutral, is not possible within the American system. They say laws cannot be written around the presumption of equal application to all races. One individual from the Brookings Institute described it like this. He said, we cannot employ colorblind ideology in a society that is far from colorblind. And so for this reason, most of the prevailing American ideologies are considered racist. Things like individualism is considered racist. Capitalism, that's why it's considered racist, because it's American, because it is part of this system. Democracy is considered racist. Meritocracy, just letting people achieve what they're capable of achieving on their own without external influences, that is considered inherently racist. Those ideologies, they say, benefit white people, but always have the effect of suppressing people of color because presumably the system is racist, the environment is racist, and the environment, the system, is not actually colorblind. So I'm not asking you to agree or disagree, but do you understand what this claim is making? This claim is saying that the structure is racist. And so individual policies, if they are colorblind, all it is supporting the racist structure. That's the claim. Pillar number six. This is an interesting one. The claim is that knowledge, everything we think we know anyway, knowledge is a social construct. Critical race theory claims, for example, that the scientific method is a white way of advancing knowledge, while storytelling is the black way of advancing knowledge. For this reason, using the scientific method to discover knowledge is assumed to be racist. So I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but that's true. I wouldn't be saying it if it's not true, by the way. So speaking on something like this is very difficult because I'm having to dig through all of these things that I do not understand and in many cases don't even believe and then try to explain it in a satisfying way. And sometimes I just feel like that's not possible. But I've really done my best to try to explain this in a way that would be satisfying to somebody who is a proponent of critical race theory. But anyway, this is one of the claims, that the scientific method is actually racist and enabling to white supremacy because it's just part of the system, because it tries to be neutral, and anything they say that tries to be neutral is actually perpetuating racism. And so for that reason, you don't know what you think you know because you only know it in the context of a racist system. See what I'm saying? And this idea agrees with previous pillars of critical race theory, that any policy, again, or procedure that purports to be colorblind is in fact perpetuating racism. And since the classical scientific method is designed to be neutral and colorblind, it actually has the effect of reproducing racism. And so, according to critical race theory, the only way to avoid perpetuating racism is to assume that racism has influenced the peoples and communities being studied. I was totally baffled when I read this in peer-reviewed published research that you cannot trust the outcome of a study unless it has intentionally given consideration to the racial influences in that community of people. And so this position concludes that blacks and minority groups alone are qualified to speak on their race, their community, and racism. If they say it, it is true, according to this theory. If they felt it, their feelings must be accepted as true. Pillar number 7. This one's also very interesting. Pillar number 7 of critical race theory says that traditionally liberal values, and what that means is like the liberty values, things like freedom and individual liberty, things like neutrality, equality, objectivity, fairness. Those are liberal values in this context, liberty values. In law and legal procedures, enable and disguise the racism in our society. And so for this reason, critical race theory is intentionally subjective. So this is interesting. I think most of us would say to ourselves that we try to be neutral. We try to be objective, but critical race theory says, no, that's wrong. You must be subjective. You must intend to observe race relations in every form of scholarship. For example, one critical race theorist says, critical race theory observes that scholarship that ignores race is not demonstrating neutrality, but adherence to the existing racial hierarchy. That's basically a restatement of what I said to you earlier. And this is why, hopefully this settles a lot of confusion for you like it did for me, this is why everything is assumed to have a racial bias or racial explanation, because in critical race theory, literally everything is traced back to race and oppression of people of color. Critical race theory is, quote, a challenge to the dominant ideology of the objectivity of scholarship. Again, have you ever heard someone say, seems like everything is racist these days? Again, it sounds like a joke, but in critical race theory, that's literally true. So what do any of these things have to do with the Christian faith? Well, some of these things very obviously relate to the Christian faith, and we will talk about those. But let me share another part of this. Hidden in these core beliefs is a conflict with Christianity. Critical race theory will say, sometimes directly, often indirectly, but critical race theory will say that Christianity is one of the institutions of oppression, a complicit part of the white hierarchy of racism. Christianity, by many people, is considered a white man's religion. And so, from this way of thinking, to spread Christianity is to spread white supremacy and further the marginalization of blacks and other minority groups. And so, from this perspective, if you're a Christian, you're actually part of the problem. So how so? Critical race theory, very importantly, explains society based on power dynamics. If you do much reading at all on critical race theory, that will come up a lot. Power dynamics, that's what it's all about in critical race theory. Every person, according to this theory, is either oppressed or an oppressor based on your race, your gender, your religion, and other classifications and how they fit into the structure of society. And it is true that for a very long time, Christian values and Christian organizations have been leading forces in American culture. Even if these Christian influences were often misguided, even if they were often superficial, even if those influences were often wrong, it's still true that for a long time, the majority of Americans who identified with any religion at all identified with Christianity. It is true that any white person who identifies with any religion at all is more than likely to identify with Christianity. And so for this reason and others, Christianity is viewed as an instrument of oppression used by the dominant groups against the marginalized groups. I wanted to stop there for just a moment to see if there are any questions or comments just based on our understanding of what the theory is. Please believe me that eventually we will go through and dissect some of these ideas, but right now, do you have any questions about what this theory is?
Could you repeat what you said about only a black person could speak on behalf of a black person's opinion?
Yes.
Something about that?
Yeah, so this is about the way that knowledge is constructed. So one of the beliefs of critical race theory is that the scientific method, a neutral way of discovering knowledge, the belief is that that's inherently racist. Anything that intends to be neutral is actually racist. And so the preferred way, in the opinion of critical race theory, is to let blacks and minorities tell their own story. That the scientific method is not necessary to demonstrate the reality of that because knowledge is a social construct anyway. And so if they believe it to be true, they know it to be true. They say that it's true, that it must in fact be true because knowledge is something that we invent anyway. I'm confused by that too. I'm not asking it to make sense. I'm just saying that's a way of explaining it. We've got another comment or question back here.
Can a person of color be a racist?
I know exactly what you're asking, and I've wondered that exact question, and some of the resources I looked at said no, actually. Some of the resources I looked at said no, that it's not possible for a black person to be a racist because it's not possible for them to be a part of the dominant group. If you're white, you're by virtue a part of the dominant group. If you're black, you're by virtue part of the marginalized group, so it is not possible for you as a black. And I'm not saying that's right, but that is the answer you'll get. Go ahead. I think that's correct. I did not take the time to sort out how this applies to other countries. I can barely sort out how it applies here. So, but that's a fair question. Brenda? Yeah. Yeah, so her comment when we go through these things is just Satan is the master author of confusion. He's quite good at creating things like this that make things very confusing. And as I say that, please let me clarify that I'm not saying this is all totally wrong, because that's not correct, is it? There are parts of this that are obviously true, and it is okay to acknowledge elements of this, ideas of this that are truths. For example, we'll talk later about how racism is real. So it's okay to acknowledge that that is true, but that is the difficulty of this, is sorting through the things that are true and the things that aren't true. It is, in a lot of ways, like the theory of evolution. There are many things, details, specific points in the theory of evolution that are true. Do things change over time? Sure. If you put an organism in an environment that is competing with other organisms that are more fit for that environment, which species will survive in that environment in the long term? Yeah, the one that is more fit. The idea of survival of the fittest is true to an extent. And we can accept those things out of the theory of evolution without agreeing that the whole package is true when it's clearly not. I think we'll find we can think about critical race theory in the same way, and I would say it's important that we think about critical race theory in the same way, because the world has been led to believe that if you are not a proponent of critical race theory, that you are a racist. And that's not true. And we need to be emphatic about that. Lewis has a comment back here, or Bill, somebody.
Really quick, just for everybody. We are doing a recording, and we also have people using listening assistive devices, so please wait for a microphone if you have a comment.
Sure, that's my fault.
And we also have a comment right here.
Yep, go ahead.
Look, did you look into the percentage of people that believe this theory? Like, how many, like, if you could put a number between 1 and 100% of people, say, in just the U.S., like, how many people actually believe this?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I did look at a recent survey published by Pew, and it was in the top 10 things, not critical race theory, but racial inequity, which not one in the same. Critical race theory is just a way of explaining racial inequity, but racial inequity was in the top 10 of things that apparently the American public is concerned about. Go ahead.
Much of what we've looked at here seems to be how they perceive the problem.
Yes.
And I'm assuming they also perceive a process for a solution.
Yes.
Are we going to be looking at some of those things that, because where it's going to be where meets the road is when things are happening.
Sure, yeah. Well, the solution to the problem is to tear down the American way. Yeah, that is the proposed solution to the problem. I know.
Does that mean tear up interstate highways or?
No, it means light the. No, it means light the Constitution on fire and start over. That is, as I understand it. I know that sounds really obnoxious and extreme, but there may be people who can comment on this better than I can. But like I said, towards the beginning, the purpose of critical race theory is very specifically to tear down these structures of American society. And the end goal is to demonstrate perfect racial equity so that in every measure of society, races are represented in a way that is proportional to their representation in the general population. And so, for example, one of the ways that they believe that you must solve this is by not being neutral. So, but that's a very good question, Mike, and I wish I had a... That's a good question. I wish I had a better developed answer for you. Lewis has had his hand up for a while. I shouldn't be making these decisions. Sorry.
Well, we didn't choose the body into which we were born. I didn't choose that. And so there's an inherent offense to be accused for just being here.
Yeah.
But being born again, it calls us to higher ground than just being offensed, feeling offense because somebody accuses us of being racist. We're called upon to uphold the love of God and to love our neighbors as ourselves. And it is the vision of Jesus Christ. It is the gospel, a part of the gospel that the people of God do go beyond racial barriers or societal barriers to learn the work of love.
Yes.
And this, what we have to hold on to, and I'm afraid, you know, these social distractions can, well, I can go back to the old man and be offended and get really in a ranting mood.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I'll have a lot more to say about that later. Thank you for that comment. Go ahead.
So I had a question because as a choral director, this comes up in a very interesting way. Mm. Many choral directors see themselves as ambassadors of social justice to the point where they will have woke concerts. Not kidding.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was in a choral director's, they called it a fall fall conference, basically. And the sentiment was, if you are not of that race or that culture, you have no legitimate reason to even perform that music.
Mm. Yeah.
So I see this as bleeding into all kinds of things that we never would have even thought about. So it's something that's on our doorstep,
sure.
Honestly. And myself as a choral director, they started off the whole thing with how you identify as yourself. So there's a thing. And I raised my hand and I said, I identify as a Christian. I identify as a child of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I identify all of you in this room as a soul. And the room got real quiet.
But you're exactly right. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So I just thought that, you know, I don't know if you have a link in between that, but I see those two as linked with the critical race theory and the, there's a word for it. There's a term that I'm blanking on. Yes, no, but I mean between that and like basically like you have no right to talk about anybody else's culture other than your own. Thank you. Cultural appropriation. Thank you.
Very good. What some of you are bringing up is a very important point, I think relates to my introduction to this class, that it's just so very important that we understand this and approach this subject and all social issues from the perspective of a Christian. Just like Lewis was saying, some of these issues do offend us, but that's a human response, isn't it? I think that is a human response. The Christ-like response is to realize that the world is under the influence of the prince of the power of the air, that people are consumed with the nature of the flesh, and that it takes reasonable people, Christians, to understand this and realize that these are only obstacles to presenting the gospel to people. The goal of conquering something like this is strictly, entirely, for the purpose of sharing the gospel. And if that's not our purpose, there is no other purpose. Are there any other comments? Well, I've still got 5 minutes, so we'll start into the next section here. Where it's right and where it's wrong. As I've just said, as Christians, we have to be the reasonable ones. Do you expect people in the secular world to be reasonable? I don't. Christians, we must be the ones that have the humility, the clarity, the self-awareness to look into an ideology like this and recognize things that are true and recognize things that are not true. Obviously, some ideologies that originate in human minds might be mostly right. Some ideas might be entirely wrong. And there are many man-made ideologies that never get it right at all. Proponents of critical race theory, I do think, make some accurate claims about racism, but also some inaccurate claims. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that. We should acknowledge the statements that are factually correct, and we can do that while at the same time acknowledging the things that are wrong, acknowledging the misinformation, the misrepresentations, and the biblically incompatible claims. Don't you do this when you talk to somebody who is a believer in Christ, but don't believe everything they ought to believe about Christ. Don't you do the same thing? Validate what they do believe. That's right. Agree with them enthusiastically when you can. And that gives you more leverage when you need to disagree with them. And that's what we need to do with some of these social issues. We are capable of critical thinking, and if we don't do it, who will? So once again, we have to stay perfectly focused on the relevant issues that intersect with our faith, with our salvation, with the mission of the church. We have to dissociate our interest in this topic as American citizens from our interest in this topic as citizens of the kingdom of God. For example, critical race theory claims that racism is embedded in the structure of American society. Again, this is essentially the definition of critical race theory. If this is true, that would be quite disturbing. But let me ask you something. As a Christian, do you need to know if that's true? I don't need a yes or no right now, but just think about that. If racism is built into the structure of American society. Do you need to know that? Would the existence of systemic racism in America have any meaningful effect on your faith, on your salvation, on your Christian duties, on the mission of the church? My conclusion is no. I don't think so. Obviously, I need to know that bigotry is a sin. Obviously, I need to know that racism is a sin. But whether or not racism is covertly perpetuated by the American system, I just don't think is one of my central priorities as a Christian. I find that to be a very interesting idea. I have an opinion about whether or not that is true. I think it's very interesting to know if it's true, but I really don't think I need to know if it's true. As a Christian, do you need to know every lie that's ever been told? You don't, and this is part of the difficulty of this exercise. Another example, critical race theory claims that legal advances for people of color are only the result of interest convergence. Again, this would be disturbing if it's true. And as an American citizen, I'm interested in knowing if that is true. But as a Christian, black or white or anything else, do I need to know if that is true? Do I need to fight for the upheaval of society? Do I need to fight against the upheaval of society? Is that what Christians are supposed to do? I don't think so. Whatever racial bias may exist in the American legal system, I do not think has a direct effect on my personal responsibility to daily walk in the steps of Christ, to say what Christ would say, to do what Christ would do, to be a reflection of His glory and His grace and His mercy and His forgiveness. I don't know if I need to know the truth on all of these things to be entirely the person that Christ wants me to be. So I'll let you think on that. I totally realize that you may still be deciding if you agree or disagree, and that is perfectly fine. I invite your comments and questions after the class. Thank you.